Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This has been a big week for SeaWorld and orcas in captivity in the United States. Just yesterday, today's guest, journalist David Kirby, wrote, quote, SeaWorld has lost its attempt to appeal a scathing May 31st verdict from a federal law judge. It is the third major legal defeat in a row for the Marine Mammal Entertainment Park in the death of Don Branchot, a beloved 40-year-old Orlando orca trainer who was grabbed, dunked, rammed, and killed by the 12,000-pound orca bull named Tillicum in 2010. David Kirby writes about Branchot's death in his new book, Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales. He says her death forever changed the emotionally charged debate about whether marine mammals should be held captive. And in the book, he introduces us to former SeaWorld trainers turned animal rights activists and the men and women that champion SeaWorld and the captivity of whales. Kirby says there are two camps. You've got the pro-captivity people and the anti-captivity. He writes, quote, one side views SeaWorld as a Garden Hilton for killer whales, and the other side views it as a Hanoi Hilton for killer whales, end quote. According to the first ever survey of U.S. public opinion on killer whales, only 1 in 4 supports keeping whales in captivity. Now, this poll was taken by the Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society. If you ask SeaWorld, they say the polls they conduct are quite the opposite. David Kirby is a nonfiction journalist, and he is currently on his way to a studio in New York. So why don't we open the phone lines while he makes his way to the studio? And I'd love to hear from you. This debate gets a lot of attention, and in the last couple of years, it's really heated up. And now that SeaWorld is going to court, who knows? The rules might change. What's going on right now is that SeaWorld might not be allowed to have trainers in the water with orcas. So where do you stand on this issue? Do you think orcas should be held captive? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Is captivity in amusement parks good for orcas? Is orca captivity good for society? Where do you stand on this issue? And I understand that David has reached the studio. David is the author of Evidence of Harm and Animal Factory. That's an acclaimed investigation into the environmental impact of factory farms. And his brand new book is Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. New York City transit system got me here eventually.
Well, it's perfect timing. Thank you so much for joining us. David, did you have any idea that this lawsuit would coincide so perfectly with the release of your book?
No. In fact, I was afraid that this was all going to be happening many, many months ago and would have been done and over with by now. The legal system moves slowly, and the judge who ruled against SeaWorld took his time, wrote a very lengthy and very thoughtful and rather scathing opinion in refusing to overturn the safety violation. He reduced it from willful to serious, but he kept in place all of the safety abatements that will prevent trainers from getting back in the water. And he took SeaWorld to task in his ruling for presenting evidence in their own defense that was questionable.
So take us back. Give us some context about this case.
This case, of course, stems from the now quite famous killing of an orca trainer in Orlando named Dawn Branchout. She was a highly skilled and experienced trainer, one of the most senior trainers at SeaWorld. She was one of the only few people at SeaWorld who were authorized to work with the whale Tillicum. Tillicum is a 12,000-pound male orca taken from the waters of Iceland when he was a very young calf or infant. And he has a rap sheet. Tillicum had killed a trainer in British Columbia in 1991, and the park that had him and two other killer whales decided to get out of the killer whale business. All three whales were involved in that trainer's death, and nobody wanted them, but SeaWorld was only too happy to take them. Tillicum went to Orlando, where he was used as a breeding bull mostly, and he still comes out at the end of the show to do the big splash session sometimes. Then in 1999, a trespasser stayed over after hours and snuck into Shamu Stadium. There's, you know, maybe 5 or 6 pools that he could have chosen to jump in, and he jumped in Tillicum's pool and did not make it out. Mm-hmm. So everybody knew that Tillicum had already killed two people. And he killed his third victim on February 24th, 2010. And that's when the federal government, in the guise of OSHA, got involved. And then that's how the legal proceedings started.
Well, and I wish we had an opportunity to ask SeaWorld why, after two killings, would you still allow Tillicum to, you know, perform these tricks rather than just releasing him? Because clearly something's not right there. We did invite SeaWorld, and they declined our invitation. Instead, they sent us this statement, quote, "While we have not yet been given the opportunity to read Mr. Kirby's book, we are familiar with his articles and blog posts on SeaWorld and the issues of marine mammal display. He has been very candid about his personal opposition to SeaWorld's killer whale program, and we anticipate that his book will expand on those themes. We disagree with Kirby's positions on marine mammal display and hope that he, unlike many others who engage in the debate over these issues, confines his arguments to matters of fact." How would you respond to that?
It's very cordial. I think it's very respectful, and it's absolutely accurate. I do disagree. I make no bones about it. I am a journalist. When I cover a news story, I keep my opinions out of it, but as an author and somebody who does write about science, I couldn't look at the evidence and sit here and talk to you, Rose, and say, oh, I'm still agnostic, I'm neutral, I don't have an opinion. That would be a lie, and I was trained never to lie. So, yes, I am upfront about my opposition to this practice. I made no bones about it. SeaWorld knows it. That was a process. I certainly didn't start out that way. And as to their comment about sticking to the facts or however they worded it, I think I did. The reviews are stunning, I have to say, without sounding too braggartly. And one just came in from The New Scientist magazine, and they said I closed the case. I made the scientific argument convincingly that captivity is not good for these animals.
So talk about the process. Where did you stand on this issue when you started the research?
I was completely agnostic. I grew up in California. I used to go to SeaWorld when I was a kid. I actually saw the very original Shamu back in the 70s and had just sort of neutral feelings about SeaWorld and not very many feelings at all about killer whales, other than I thought they were amazing animals and very beautiful. Mm. That was about it. And I remember February 24th, 2010 very well. I work at home, and I sometimes keep, you know, MSNBC or CNN on in the background just for company sometimes. And I remember seeing shots. I remember seeing the headlines and feeling very bad for Don Branshaw and seeing shots of this whale just floating motionlessly in this tiny pool all by himself, shot from a helicopter, and was up in the corner of the screen. And looking back on that, I felt bad for Dawn and her family. I didn't feel anything for the whale. Mm. I didn't even give the whale much consideration. That's how ignorant I was of the situation, I'm confessing. And time went by, and I kind of forgot about it. And then that August, OSHA issued this violation, a willful violation. It's the most severe form, against SeaWorld. And I happened to be on Larry King Live that night because, as you know, I wrote a book about factory farming.
Right.
And I went on to talk about the salmonella egg recall. And the other segment that night was a woman who had come forward, a former executive, very high-level executive at SeaWorld, who was now making charges of basically obstruction of justice and hiding documents and basically stonewalling the OSHA investigation. And I thought, as an investigative journalist who often writes about corporate malfeasance, well, that's a sexy story. I called my agent the next day. We started talking about it. And, of course, I write narrative nonfiction. So the way I tell my books, they read like novels. There's characters that you get involved with. In my search for characters, I immediately came across Naomi Rose instantly. She's one of the leading experts on killer whales in the world and works at the Humane Society of the United States. And that just got me into, she's now a leading opponent of captivity. And within days, I was learning about the issues involved in keeping these animals in small confinements. And the focus of my book, it didn't change, it expanded. So I wrote about all kinds of things, but one of the, or probably the main theme, is that captivity is bad for these animals. Mm.
And now you have a 400-page exhaustive book really looking at these issues. So when we talk about science, what is the scientific case against orca captivity? What did you find?
to make the case and prove the case, and one reason why the book is 400 pages, but the chapters are short, and nobody has complained. Nobody's told me they're
going to. No, I mean, I have to say, it reads like a thriller. I loved your book. I mean, it's fascinating. We'll talk later, but I love the section, especially on the history of orcas, and also the difference between the names, orcas and killer whales. But we'll talk about that later in the show. First, let's talk about captivity and the science.
Sure. And you may have noticed that the first section of the book is largely devoted. It's called blackfish, which is a Native American term for these animals. And it's largely involved with the social biology, the natural history, the social behavior, family behavior of whales in the wild. We follow Naomi Rose up to Johnstone Strait, where she spends 5 summers camped out on this remote island where there are whales everywhere every summer. At that same time, actually, these 4 trainers were working at SeaWorld. Jeff Ventry, Sam Berg, Carol Ray, and John Jett. And they were starting to realize, just as Naomi was realizing how majestic life in the wild was for these animals, the trainers were starting to realize how compromising life in a swimming pool was for these animals. And, of course, they all come to oppose captivity in their own way. So it's very important to learn about the natural behaviors of these animals to realize why the unnatural habitat into which they're introduced is so harmful, I believe, and I think most scientists believe. We can talk about mental health. We can talk about physical health. We can talk about reproductive health. The amount of work it takes to keep whales at SeaWorld alive and performing is monumental. SeaWorld brags about its world-class veterinary care and dental care, but whales in the wild don't need any of those things. And I describe how the fish are often, they have their gills stuffed with vitamins, which means the whales are not getting proper nourishment from their food. They're injected with fresh water. They would actually inject fresh water with a syringe into some of these fish. Because when you freeze fish and then re-thaw it, it loses nutritional value and it loses fresh water. All whales and dolphins get their fresh water from their food. And at SeaWorld, they're not getting enough. So, for example, Tillicum, who is chronically ill and has lately not been performing very much and was very sick on the day he killed Don Branshaw, from my understanding, he also gets 80 pounds of gelatin every day,
wow,
big chunks of it, just to prevent dehydration.
Wow.
The dental issue is just really upsetting. These animals, they pop their jaws on those horizontal bars of the metal gates, and they break their teeth. And once their teeth get broken, the pulp has to be drilled out, and it's done with a Dremel drill that you get at Home Depot. And I don't think very much anesthetic, maybe some local.
And David, so we're talking again, I mean, this is a Tillicum.
I could go on, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
I know.
And we should talk about longevity, but go ahead.
Yes. So Tillicum, again, a 12,000-pound orca bull. Where is Tillicum today?
He's in Orlando, Florida. He spends most of his day and night alone, usually in a back pool, floating listlessly. I think it's important to note that in both SeaWorld Texas and SeaWorld Florida, one whale in each park has died from mosquito-borne tropical illnesses because they spend so much time floating at the surface, and there are illnesses borne by mosquitoes in those places. Tillicum spent a long time banned from all shows. He's always been banned from so-called water work. You could never do the other spectacular tricks that they used to do and don't do right now and hope to do again in the near future. That's where OSHA comes in. You know, the leaping from the rostrum of the whale and the rocket hops and things like that. Tillicum was never used for that purpose. Like I said, he was mostly used for artificial insemination. He's masturbated on a regular basis, which is one reason one of my characters ended up leaving SeaWorld. And he sometimes, when he's feeling up to it, performs the big splash segment at the end. Now, Don Branshaw that day was in the water with Tillicum. You just can't describe it any other way. She was in about 10 inches, maybe a foot of water on a ledge at the side of the pool, and Tillicum, of course, was down in the deeper water right next to her. She was finishing up a show, a smaller show, not the big Shamu show, and she was in what was called a relationship session, and Tillicum grabbed her and pulled her in and killed her. That was SeaWorld protocol. SeaWorld considers that dry work, if you can believe it. So being in a foot of water with a 12,000-pound whale, the ocean's top predator, who has already been responsible for the deaths of two people, to allow your employee to do that, whether they want to or not, or think it's good or not, OSHA clearly thought was negligent and was willful negligence.
We're speaking with investigative journalist David Kirby about his new book, Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. And we already have a number of emails. We'd love to hear from you on these two important questions that David poses. Is captivity in amusement parks good for orcas? Is orca captivity good for society? Where do you stand on this issue? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, we did invite SeaWorld to join us. They declined, but they did send us a statement saying that David Kirby has been very candid about his personal opposition to SeaWorld's killer whale program, and we anticipate that his book will expand on those themes. Now, for their part, they argue that in order to turn people into environmentalists, they need to see marine mammals like dolphins and orcas doing tricks, because then you appreciate their beauty, and then you might talk about the importance of conservation. So what do you think about that argument? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from AD in Monterey. Hi, AD. Welcome to the show.
Rose, good morning. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
This is the one morning I did not want to miss your show. David, thank you for doing this really on-time book, and it seems like it's very thoroughly researched and put together. I can't wait to read it. There's so many different issues with captivity that are wrong. First of all, you take an animal that can, with one downstroke, do 35 miles an hour and put him in a little pool that takes away all his acoustic ability. Orcas communicate, you know, four or five different ways, and you put him into a pool like with Keiko's issues. He was just not able to communicate at all. It's like equivalent to taking a handful of ball bearings and throwing them against a tin building. You can drive yourself crazy with that sound going off all the time, and their vocalizations shut down to from five to nearly one when they moved Keiko, for instance, up to Oregon in Newport and built the upright pool. He could hear the sirens and fire engines and the ambulances, and started copying them within the first couple of weeks. But the main thing is that these animals, you'd mentioned longevity. In the wild, you know, they live to match the human lifespan of females, you know, 80, 90, and males, you know, only 50 to 70. In the wild, they live to be great-grandmothers, whereas, like Lolita, has great-great-grandkids still in the wild, the orca that's in Florida. But in captivity, the average might be 7 years. That's the average. I talked with I forgot the fellow's name, Bruco Berry. He showed me his book, and he had 1,900 entries. And I saw these lines that were pink and blue and green, and three-fourths of them were pink. And I thought those were the good animals, and that blue and green were sick or dying. It was just the opposite. Four-fifths of them had already died, you know. So, I mean, the issue of bringing awareness to orcas, I talk to people all the time about whales, and what I find is that people really want to become an orca trainer when they get into the parks. That's what they want to grow up to be, and orcas have some really serious issues right now with, you know, war games going on off both coasts, and the sound pollution, which could be a whole nother show, Rose.
Right.
And the just the amount of chemical pollution. I mean, they're toxic waste dumps floating around.
Well, AD, thank you so much. David, AD brought up a number of issues there. And I guess when you think, he brought up Rick O'Berry, who used to train the dolphins in Flipper and is now on a mission to save dolphins, and he's the main character in the Cove documentary. These issues are getting so much more attention just the last couple of years. What is your main goal with this book?
My main goal is always to tell a good story. I feel like that's my job, and I like to think I did that here. But on a more moral level and ethical level, awareness, I think people need to be informed. And I also think that the way we treat other species speaks to ourselves, mm-hmm. speaks about ourselves. Just like the way we treat our poorest people, or the way we treat prisoners, or people who we just for some reason might feel superior to. And I'm not sure we should actually feel superior to killer whales in some ways. So I want people to learn about these animals. I want them to come to admire them as much as I have. I'm not calling for any kind of boycott or any action against SeaWorld. I oppose their killer whale program, as they noted. And what I would like to see is for public sentiment to one day send this on its way into the history books, where I think it belongs, with dancing bears and, well, I was going to say cockfighting, but that's still going on. But you know what I mean. I don't mean to compare it to cockfighting, because the animals are not abused and they're not forced to fight with each other. But I would like to see a gradual phasing out of killer whale shows. And the only way that's going to happen is if SeaWorld and other parks stop breeding these animals and start allowing them to retire. You know, every other animal in show business virtually gets to retire. There are entire farms filled with animals used in movies. And when they're done filming, that animal gets to go play. Killer whales work up until virtually the day they die. The longevity issues that AD mentioned, and by the way, AD, I'm going to be speaking in Santa Cruz on the 26th, and Rose, maybe we can talk about that too.
Yes.
It's important to note that there's average lifespan and there's maximum life expectancy. And they're quite different, especially in killer whales. In males, the average is 30. Maximum is probably 60 on the outside. Females' average is around 50, maybe a little less. But as AD mentioned, there are females who are great-great-grandmothers. I'll be in San Juan Island in a couple days. I can't wait, because it's like 100 degrees here in New York. And sorry, I don't know if I'm supposed to mention that I'm in New York, Rose. I apologize.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
No, it's fine.
Oh, I already did mention
you
that.
You did.
Okay. But I'll be in San Juan Island, and I will be able to see JK and L Pons once again. And it's fabulous. And there is a whale there named Granny, who is thought to be 100 years old.
Wow.
And she leaps out of the water like nobody's business.
Oh, that's amazing. It's supposed to be an amazing place. You can actually kayak and see orcas, right, in the San Juan Islands.
I have friends who are doing that as we speak.
That's
you can just sit on the cliff free of charge and watch them.
If you need a researcher, I'll join you. Today we're speaking with David Kirby, author of Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. And we'd love to hear from you. Where do you stand on this issue? And if you've been to water parks like SeaWorld, what was your experience like? How did it affect you? You're listening to Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW, where we have been broadcasting on the FM dial since 1941. Now with online listening, we have listeners worldwide. But just because you live in the Bay Area doesn't mean that KALW's online streams are not for you. Because if you hear a KALW at work but not at home, or lose reception on your commute, check out the online listening options at kalw.org. Just click on the Listen Live link at the top of our home page at kalw.org. Thank you for listening to and supporting your local public radio station, KALW, San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there, sign up for our new newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with the Kitchen Sisters about The Hidden World of Girls. It's a multimedia project that explores the many ways girls are growing up and making a difference. We will also speak with young girls living in at-risk communities who say they are often misrepresented in the media. So what stories do girls want to tell? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also like us on Facebook. We are ramping up our Facebook presence. Today we're speaking with David Kirby. He's out with a new book called Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. And he writes, it's a lengthy book. He takes a look at all sides of this debate. He says one side views SeaWorld as a Garden Hilton for killer whales, and the other side views it as a Hanoi Hilton for killer whales. So where do you stand? Do you think mammals should be held in captivity? SeaWorld says in order to turn people into environmentalists, they need to see dolphins and orcas up close, and putting on a show is a perfect way to do that. So if you've been to SeaWorld, I'm sure many of you have been to water parks. In fact, I started loving dolphins because I went to SeaWorld as a child. How did it affect you, and what are your thoughts on these important questions? David Kirby will be in Santa Cruz on the 26th. And where will it be, David? It's not on your website.
I need to post it as soon as I get home.
It's the
Loudoun something community center. Forgive me for not knowing
Loudoun.
It. You can Google it.
All right, we'll find it.
L-O-U-D-E-N.
It's the main
city community center in Santa Cruz.
Okay, and I'm sure our listeners can let us know where that is, and we'll post information. And then I'll be interviewing David next Wednesday at 7 at the Hub on 901 Mission in San Francisco. There's limited seating, so please register online, and it is a free event. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or better yet, post a comment at yourcallradio.org. We have a number of emails. Angie writes, I say no to captivity. It is pure evil. Claire says captivity should be illegal. Free all orcas and underwater life. And Robert says, capitalism is not good for orcas, animals, people, or society. Educating children and others to be closer to nature is important so that they will love nature and take care of it. But exploiting animals to make money, there's something wrong there, isn't there? I mean, this is the SeaWorld's argument, is that if you want to turn people into environmentalists, you need to expose them to orcas and dolphins, for example, up close. And this is the perfect way to do it.
Well, I disagree with all those statements. it is very helpful to have people experience animals up close and in person, but it's not necessary to go to an amusement park to do that. When I first went to SeaWorld to do research in Orlando, I took in the whale and dolphin show there, which I didn't like, to be honest. And then I was with friends, and they lived in St. Petersburg, and we drove down to the beach, and we had lunch at this, there's like a river channel right there. We're sitting at an outdoor table, and a bunch of dolphins came up and, like, started swimming and playing right in front of us. And it didn't cost a dime, and it was far more entertaining than anything I saw in that show that was like a kind of a cheap version of Cirque du Soleil. So I got a lot more out of my lunch at the sea than I did out of Whale and Dolphin Stadium. And as far as the orcas are concerned, I mean, again, when you watch them either from a boat or from the shore, in the Pacific Northwest or Iceland, or if you can get there, to New Zealand or other places, is there's just nothing like it. Now, people can learn to love animals without ever seeing them. Kids are crazy about dinosaurs. They're obsessed with dinosaurs.
Right.
They've never seen one. And SeaWorld says, oh, it's elitist. You know, only rich people can see orcas in the wild. Which is simply not true. I mean, it costs, if you live in the middle of the country, it costs just as much to fly to Seattle as it does to fly to Orlando or San Diego. And you can, like I said, go out to San Juan Island and stand on shore and see them. You can get on the Victoria Clipper that leaves in the morning from Seattle, and I believe kids under 12 are free. And you can take in a whale watching tour and be back by dinner time. And you are guaranteed to spend about 2 hours with the whales, where with a naturalist telling you how the whales actually behave, whereas at SeaWorld it's 20 minutes, and you learn nothing about killer whales during that show. There are some factoids before the show. There's a few pieces of signage with some information about killer whales. You don't learn where they come from. You don't learn certainly how long they live. You don't learn what they eat. You don't learn how they forage. You don't learn how they socialize with each other. You don't learn the fact that resident males stay with their mothers for life, often within one body length of her. They don't want you knowing that stuff. You don't learn how incredibly intelligent these animals are, how big their brains are, how they communicate, how they echolocate off objects to find food and navigate and communicate. And, I mean, they, like I said, they're spectacular. So I don't think you learn very much from seeing them at SeaWorld, and I don't think people leave saying, yay, let's go save the Puget Sound. Let's go clean up PCBs. SeaWorld almost makes you, there are signs there saying, just by your visit today, you are helping the oceans, you know, because we give money, blah, blah, blah. And I think that some people leave thinking that they're off the hook. And I've heard a lot of people leaving saying, gosh, weren't those Shamu whales terrific? And, of course, there's no such species as a Shamu whale. So what kind of education exactly is going on?
Well, David, we've got full lines. So let's hear from Jamie in San Francisco. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Rose. I've got a cold. I sound funny. But we've talked before. I'm the founder and director of San Francisco's Wildlife Rehabilitation Program, SFROMP. And I can tell you that my love of wildlife came from experiencing the wilderness. I was appalled as a child when taken to a zoo and traumatized, in fact, and believed those animals were imprisoned without cause, and just had a sense that we were simply keeping them in captivity for our own entertainment, and that it was sad that these animals' lives had been taken away from them. And as I did get older and spend time in wilderness observing animals in the wild, the wildlife is you know what it's all about, and I think it is such a privilege to work with wildlife, and sometimes they'd rather die than be handled by a human, but when we can do minimally invasive work to save their life and release them, that is such a joy to me. And I think David for his book. I really do. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for calling in, and we'll get a response in just a minute. That's Jamie. She works with San Francisco's Wildlife Rehabilitation Program. And let's hear next from Rosalyn in Santa Cruz. Hi, Rosalyn.
Hi. I just want to thank you so much for having this show on the air today. I was really excited about it. And David Kirby, thank you so much for writing this book also. I'm going to go get it right away and start reading it. And to answer your question, I believe it'll be the Loudon Nelson Center in downtown Santa.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard Loudon something, and I thought it's got to be the Loudon Nelson.
Yeah, we just confirmed it last night, so I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. I'll be looking forward to seeing you then also. And I come from South Dakota, and my first and favorite movie was Free Willy. Right from the start, I'm like, yes, they should not be in captivity. That's not fair. And I've never even seen an orca whale live, and yet they are actually one of my favorite animals. It's my dream to be able to see one in the wild. I refuse to go to SeaWorld. And to me, it sounds a little bit about as an excuse to say that, oh, we're helping people get more in tune or with nature, they're going to get to know the animals. And I don't want to say that's not true, but it kind of sounds a little bit like an excuse to keep them in captivity and to be able to make money off them. And those animals don't have a choice, whether they're there or not. And so, I would just like to say I'm personally not for them being in captivity. I think they should be in the wild. Thank you for doing your book. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for calling in, Rosalyn. And since you loved Free Willy, you should definitely check out the documentary Keiko, The Untold Story, which is about the release of the world's most famous whale. And David, have you seen this film, this documentary?
I have, yes. It's very good. Well, of course, three of my chapters are dedicated to Keiko.
Yeah, and what's amazing is when you watch when Keiko was released, just the takeoff is incredible. It's just...
It is. It's unexplainable, and it's very remarkable. He swam 700 miles by himself.
He just goes. It's amazing to watch.
To Norway. Yeah, yeah. He's an amazing example. You know, we should talk about, when I said retirement, I didn't mean releasing them into the open ocean necessarily, although I think there are a couple of candidates. Lolita is certainly one. I'm going to see her family this week. Corky at SeaWorld San Diego is probably another one. For the others, especially the captive-bred ones, you would have to keep them in a sea pen like they did with Keiko. Mm. Now, Keiko eventually, the net to the sea pen was dropped, and he left his cove, and he went out into the ocean, and he kind of sort of hung out with other whales, and he learned kind of sort of how to catch fish, and then he took off for Norway. But you could keep some of these animals in sea pens, and SeaWorld could still own them, and still make money off them by charging people to sit on the shore and watch them engage in far more natural behaviors in the open ocean. One other thing I just really want to bring up before we're out of time. There is a killer whale in the Bay Area, and her name is Shuka. And I think it's called Discovery Kingdom now up in Vallejo.
Right.
And federal law is very strict about keeping these animals. Not only do you have to have an educational component and a conservational component and be open to the public, but you also have to adhere to the Animal Welfare Act, which is administered under, of all things, the USDA, Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. And, you know, we have people who go out to inspect factory farms and pig farms. There aren't too many marine biologists at the USDA. There are a couple. And they just don't enforce the law. Now, there's two solitary orcas. The law says you cannot keep any cetacean, any whale or dolphin, in captivity by itself without another member of its family. Well, we haven't mentioned this, but killer whales are dolphins. They're members of the dolphin family. So technically, you can keep, let's say, a bottlenose dolphin, Flipper, as we know, with a killer whale, and that's what Lolita has. Well, Shuka doesn't even have a bottlenose dolphin or any other kind of dolphin in the tank with her. She is all alone. That is patently against U.S. law and all regulations. And just the other day, she lunged out of the water at one of her trainers. So something's going on with that animal. She's in distress. There are people in the Bay Area who would rather see her go back to a marine park in France, where I think she came from, or released to a sea pen, rather than have her there all by herself without any other cetacean companion. And now it looks like she's acting out. I mean, I saw the video, and she clearly lunges out. She gets almost all the way up out of the water.
Mm. Whoa,
it's pretty frightening.
So why isn't anything being done about this?
I don't know. I'm going to be writing about it for Huffington Post. I'm going to have a call into USDA. You should try to find out. I bet you could get some good answers as well. There's a couple of women up in the right there in Vallejo who have been working on this, and Wendy Cook and her friend's name is escaping me. I'm sorry if she's listening, but they're doing yeoman's work, but nobody's listening, nobody's helping them, and the government is just blowing them off.
So as of your writing, you report that there are 42 captive orcas at theme parks and aquariums in Canada, France, Spain, Japan, Argentina, and the U.S., which has 22 whales. 20 are at SeaWorld. And in the Cove, they did a really good job explaining how dolphins, well, are not only slaughtered, but also taken from the waters of Taiji in Japan and then flown to water parks all around the world. What is the process like with orcas? I mean, I can't imagine just how. What is the process involved? We're talking about a 12,000-pound orca. How do you grab the orca and then fly it to a different country?
Very few adult orcas have ever been taken to a marine park. They might have been caught, but they were later released. And as far as Taiji is concerned, most U.S. parks, if not all, do not source their dolphins and pilot whales from those horrible whale drives. But they used to, and SeaWorld used to, and SeaWorld now refuses to condemn the practice because they used to do it themselves, and they say they would be hypocritical to now condemn what goes on in the Cove. Killer whales, there hasn't been a wild-caught killer whale, for at least not in the United States, for a long, long time. The latest whale to be acquired is a female named Morgan who was stranded. And that's the way SeaWorld and other marine parks get a lot of their animals. They go out and, yay, we're going to rescue this animal. And, of course, we'll rehabilitate it and send it back to the ocean. But they often find a way to not do that. There was a huge outcry to Free Morgan. She was in a tiny tank in the Netherlands. The Dutch government got involved. There was a lawsuit. And what happened? She got sent to Laurel Parque in the Canary Islands, which is a business partner of SeaWorld and has five SeaWorld-owned whales, one of whom killed its trainer 2 months before Don Branchow was killed, Quito. And Morgan could probably one day end up at SeaWorld. So that's sort of basically the way they get new whales is they make them. Artificial insemination. In the past, however, they did capture them. In the 60s and the 70s, in particular, was the peak of the old cowboy days. And they would go out with what are called purse seine nets. There's the nets that you can literally draw into a purse to catch fish that swim at the surface. Sometimes I know in Iceland they would trick the whales and put fish out in the water and then snatch them all in purse seines. And then they would separate them out and put them into different netted off areas and choose usually the youngest ones. And I've seen footage of it. I've seen films with the audio. And it's tough to watch, but listening is the hardest part. And I describe Tillicum's capture in the same way. And it's gut-wrenching, and these animals are completely flipping out. You can imagine if you're walking down the street with your family and you're caught in a net and separated and thrown into a car and driven away and never seen from again. It's just traumatic beyond belief for these animals.
We're speaking with David Kirby, author of the new book, Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. And we've got full lines. We're going to try to take as many calls as we can. But first, I wanted to introduce our next guest. Sam Berg is a former trainer at SeaWorld. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Hi, David. Great to be here.
It's great to have
you. Sam, I'm so glad you made it. I wasn't sure.
So, Sam, you're on the boat in the San Juan Islands.
Oh,
well, thank you so much for calling in. Just quickly, Sam, can you talk a little bit about your journey as a trainer at SeaWorld? What was it like when you went into it, and where are you today?
Well, just like a lot of people, you know, I was fascinated by the idea of, wow, I could actually swim with a killer whale or swim with a dolphin. And I didn't really think the whole thing through. You know, so when I started, I was starstruck, just like a lot of the trainers. You know, just can't believe how lucky I am to have the job. And, you know, oh, my God, you know, this is what an incredible opportunity. But very soon, as a trainer, you start to see what goes on behind the scenes, and you start to realize that these animals are not really getting the kind of life that they could have out in the wild. And although SeaWorld teaches you to say things about the animal care and how the animals are taken care of and that they get all their needs met like they would in the wild, you know, after a while, it becomes really clear that that's not the case. So, but even so, you know, when I left SeaWorld after being there for 3.5 years, I didn't immediately think that, you know, condemned captivity. I still felt like SeaWorld was doing, as far as the industry was concerned, I thought they were still doing an excellent job with animal care, especially when you look at some of the other parks all across the world, really, that are really subpar. But ultimately, no park can meet the needs of an animal like a killer whale, just as David's been saying, you know, just considering their social structure and how far they travel, you know, 80 to 100 miles a day looking for fish. And, you know, what he was saying about the male killer whales staying so close to their moms, it's just, when you think about it, it's just not possible for a marine park to live up to anything that they're saying that they can possibly do for these animals.
What kind of insight can you give us about what goes on behind the scenes at SeaWorld? Because this is a multi-million dollar, massive corporation.
Well, you know, they really try to put the good faith on what they're doing. You know, they are corporations to make money, and so they're always going to try to put a positive spin on whatever happens behind the scenes. And, for instance, you know, we were told to tell the public that we feed the whales restaurant-quality fish. But what does that really mean? What is restaurant-quality fish? And I know David goes into it in his book, you know, but what the definition of that, there is really no definition of restaurant-quality fish. You know, that's just
fish
what we told the public. You know, also, the dorsal fin collapse is another issue, about killer whales, because in the wild, you never see a killer whale with a dorsal fin collapse. You may see some damage from a propeller or something, but you'll never see the fins that are flopped over the side that you see routinely at places like SeaWorld. And we were told to tell tourists on a daily basis that it's normal for dorsal fins to collapse in the wild, and that's absolutely not true.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for calling in, and enjoy your time in the San Juan Islands.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. That is Sam Berg. She's a former SeaWorld trainer. And again, I just want to note that we did invite SeaWorld to join us, but they declined our invitation. And we've got just about 5 minutes left. And David, we have a number of people who've been waiting patiently. So let's go through a few calls and then we'll get your response.
Sure. Did we mention that Sam is a character in my book? I wasn't sure if that was
yes.
clear.
I hope we did. If not, yes. Sam is a character in David's book. Let's go.
And a character in general.
let's hear from Harry in Alameda. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the show. Hello, Harry. Oh, sorry, we lost Harry. Harry spent a week on a sailboat and could identify orcas by their fins and realized how smart they are. Sorry, we lost you, Harry. Let's hear from Matt in Oakland. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. My question was whether there would be some way to balance the need for the general public to see these in kind of more group settings without having it be a kind of Vegas sideshow, with using modern technology so we could approximate their natural habitat a little bit better, or if there were just, some way to bring their natural behavior and natural habitat to the general public in a way that wasn't, like the diving through hoops kind of show, so that, that all of those needs could be met, the health of the animals, but also that educational and conservation component as well. Just it would require obviously require kind of a radical reimagining of those habitats and our shows. But just as a thought experiment, what would it take?
All right, thank you, Matt. We'll get a response in just a minute. Let's hear from Wendy calling in from Vallejo. Hi, Wendy.
Hey.
Hi, Rose. Hey, David.
Wendy, what's your girlfriend's name?
Vicky.
Vicky, I'm so sorry. It draws such a blank.
I just wanted to make a comment here that, growing up, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I used to go to SeaWorld, growing up as a kid, all from young kid up until I was a teenager. And in all honesty, SeaWorld taught me absolutely nothing about killer whales in the wild, nothing about what their social structure was like, their behavior, the way they fed, the way their family pods are. And it wasn't until maybe 3 years ago that I actually did my own research on killer whales and learned, just as David did, step by step, what captivity actually can be like for these animals. And I think that the parks actually put like a disassociation with the wild, and they veer more towards, you don't have to go see them in the wild. You can come see them at SeaWorld or whatever other marine park is out there. And I think people really need to take a look at this book and look into, the issues regarding killer whales in captivity.
Yeah, and Wendy, you're in Vallejo, where there is a killer whale in captivity, and every time I drive by that park, it's packed. Is that your experience?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, David, do you know, is the demand for these water parks on the rise, or what does that look like?
Well, people aren't going there just to see Shuka, but I guess she is. They are attractions. A new poll just came out this week that... interestingly, and by the way, Wendy is a character in my book as well, that showed, I was quite surprised, only 1 in 4 Americans actually supports killer whale captivity. And even people who think it's educational still oppose it. So, I think there could be more education, and that speaks to your other caller's question. Also in that poll, they asked people if SeaWorld and these parks were to eliminate their killer whale shows, would it make a difference? And the 70-something percent of the people said no. 13% said they would be less likely to attend, which is a business, fallout for SeaWorld. But 14% said they would be more likely to attend. So in terms of attendance, it apparently, according to this poll, would be a wash.
And how would you address Matt's question? Is there any way to bring these creatures to the public more naturally?
Yes, there is, and it's an excellent question, and we should be working on it right now. And again, I believe that sea pens are the way to go. There's a place where I'm going and where Sam is right now on her way on the boat. Virtually everybody in my book is gathering this week and weekend on San Juan Island for a series of lectures and films and a little bit of beer drinking, but it's going to be very fun. And there's a bay there called Kanaka Bay. It's beautiful. It's a perfect round shape. It used to be used for killer whale captures. It was a holding pen, so there's still steel hooks in the side of the rocks, and you could easily hang a net there and get 2, 3, 4 killer whales to live in there. They would have hundreds of times more room. I mean, this bay is a couple good acres big, if not bigger. Hundreds of times more room to swim around. You stop them doing the bows and the rocket hops and train them to catch fish, train them to engage in far more natural behaviors. Watching orcas in the ocean is spectacular. They spy hop, they leap, they splash, they play with each other, they play with kelp. It's incredibly entertaining, but it's all natural behavior. And you could even have a naturalist, a SeaWorld naturalist, after you pay your money to SeaWorld to go see SeaWorld's animals, to explain what's going on, instead of that blaring music and those really tacky videos about kids who see a whale and now they're, you know, they love the ocean. It would be spectacular. It would be good for the whales. It would be great for SeaWorld. It would be great for the public. These are easily accessible places. There are places on the mainland, too, that would be sea pens.
And, David, we've got 30 seconds left. We're in the middle of this lawsuit. What's next?
SeaWorld has 60 days to appeal to the Federal Court of Appeals, the District Court, Circuit Court, and it's not clear if they're going to or not. I'm pretty sure they will, because if they don't, they'll never get trainers back in the water, which is their goal. I just learned they have 10 days to certify that because now that the judge's ruling has been upheld, they need to certify that they're putting in these new abatements that will make it as safe or safer for trainers in the water than out of the water. And OSHA's not going to certify that. So we have many more battles ahead.
All right. Well, we will definitely follow that. David Kirby is author of Death at SeaWorld. Next Wednesday, I'll be speaking with David at the Hub in San Francisco at 7 o'clock. It's a free event. And then on the 26th, he'll be at the Loudoun Nelson Center in Santa Cruz. And we will talk about the difference between orca and killer whale. Sorry we didn't get to that. Thank you so much, David.
There is no difference, but
They're interchangeable. But why certain people use killer whale and certain people use
orca? Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. The submitted.
Yes. Thank you so much, David. See you soon. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How are girls coming of age? On the next Shore Call, we'll speak with the Kitchen Sisters about The Hidden World of Girls, a multimedia project that explores the many ways girls are growing up and making a difference. We'll also speak with young girls living in at-risk communities who say they're often misrepresented in the media. What do you want to know about The Hidden World of Girls? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What stories do girls want to tell? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Ellen Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in San Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.